Happy Halloween, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Happy Halloween.
Any...
Sorry. Sorry about that.
No, we are sorry. I mean, we... Like, I don't know what's been happening with Discord. This is the kind of the first time this happened. We had some connection issues, but never a complete breakdown.
Well, I've used it in the past, everyone's always complained that I've been very hard to hear, and I've never been able to get it to go louder. So,
well, yeah. Anchor to the rescue.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad it works. That's good. So, hi. Nice to meet you, by the way.
Yeah.
Likewise. Yes.
Welcome. And happy Halloween to all the listeners who will probably get this way after Halloween when it's all jingle bells and everything. But we tricked a very nice tweet into chatting with us. Welcome. How do I pronounce your name? Is it Armarna?
Armarna.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for joining us. To those listening, this is the Right Rings podcast, because apparently I'm doing housekeeping because Martin is, I don't know what he's doing.
You were quite happy to carry on talking.
I thought the point of the whole thing was for me to talk less, but okay. My name is Greg.
Where's that? That's not you. I'm Martin.
This is my unnaturally unverbose co-host, Martin. And welcome, Armana. Tell us a little bit about yourself. It was quite a whirlwind that we invited you on the podcast, and I couldn't be happier to have you on. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? Where are you from? What do you do? Those kind of things.
I'm a full-time writer because my husband is amazing and letting me have a shot at my dream for real, pretty much. So he makes the money, and I do this. So I am originally from America, obviously. I moved to Scotland because my husband is Scottish about 3 years ago. So I'm on the road to become a citizen within a few years, basically. So this is my forever home at this point.
Fantastic.
I like it so far. Writing is a bit solitary, so it's always good to make more connections and that sort of thing. So, more unique about myself, which actually plays into my writing, is I tend to go along Weird West horror type subjects, because where I grew up was pretty much exactly what you would picture in your mind as far as a tiny town in the middle of nowhere with like 200 people and kind of stuck in time, like 1950s or even earlier. I've actually seen donkeys in the back of pickup trucks, and just, you know, the dog sleeping under the truck, you know, in the middle of the road. And it's just pretty much your quintessential, your romanticized idea of kind of the old West, of what's left of it anyway. So I used to play in old mine shafts when I was a kid. My grandparents were prospectors. They knew. I have a book, actually, by Butch Cassidy's sister, signed to my grandmother, saying what a nice lady she was. And yeah, so I have like this weird kind of old West background that a lot of people even in the States don't have. So
that is pretty incredible.
Plays a lot into my writing.
Yeah,
I didn't realize it was unique until later. Basically, I just took it for granted, I guess.
Oh, when it's something you've always grown up with, you kind of do, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's really romantic and cool from the outside, and not so much, you know, from the inside. But
I don't know. I quite liked my childhood because it was so different. You know, I'd go gold panning with my grandparents and run about in the backyard up the mountains and, you know, play with the horses. It just, you know, it was different. It was before the interwebs, you know, kind of that weird period between the internet and, you know, old timey stuff, that weird small group of people that kind of live in that between era where by the time you're in college, you know, the internet was out and everything else was out. So it was kind of the best of both worlds in a certain sort of way. So yeah.
Nice. Fantastic.
And how did writing come about? I mean, it's easy to imagine that such an environment kind of brings naturally the need to tell stories, but I'm sure there's a story behind it.
Well, I've always written ever since I was pretty much as soon as I could start holding a pencil. And I've always really loved horror. I used to... Apparently, I really, really liked the first Nightmare on Elm Street a lot when I was about 4 years old. And I would find ways to get a hold of the VHS and watch it. And my dad would try to hide it, and I'd somehow find it again and be watching it. And I've just always been really enthralled with the gory, awful stuff out there. I think I read it when I was in third grade. Like, I was the kid that didn't like to dress up like a princess during Halloween. I wanted to dress up like, you know, the Grim Reaper in third grade. Like, that was kind of my thing. I always did that kind of stuff. So ever since I was little, I was writing my own stories because I read Poe and Stephen King mostly, I think, probably when I was about third grade up. Anything kind of dark like that I liked. I've always kind of been writing, at least off and on through my adult years. I started to take it more seriously once I moved here to Scotland. I was doing a regular 9-to-5 prior to this, and decided to go for it. So
awesome.
You know what's funny is that you come from a fairly peculiar environment and arrived into another fairly peculiar environment.
What's so peculiar about Scotland?
Well, a lot of.
I mean, I know the Scottish in general are peculiar, but you know,
like
I'm allowed to say that I'm half Scottish.
Well, Edinburgh is kind of like a fantasy town, really.
It is. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, dominated by a massive castle.
Well, to an American, it's just crazy. You walk down the street and everything's old and there's history everywhere and no one cares. Anyone from here is just like, we don't really care. It's 500 years old. Who cares? And to an American, that's just a little crazy. You know, it's just, we covet anything that's 50 years old. And it just kind of blows our minds that you guys just kind of like, oh, whatever, it's old. We don't care. So that was a little weird to get used to. I told a friend of mine, she asked how I was adapting. And I said that it's sort of like looking in a funhouse mirror. Like the culture is very, very similar, obviously, to American culture in a lot of ways. And everything seems like it's going fine. And then you move slightly one way and then you turn into like this short, squat, fat dude in the mirror. Because suddenly everything shifts. Just because you said one thing that was either socially not acceptable or something that you didn't know was wrong or, you know, whatever. So it has a weird way of, to an American, at least from my perspective, of turning around and kind of biting me a couple times when I wasn't expecting it kind of thing. Getting used to the slight cultural differences. Mostly with like my husband's family and things like that. There's just little things here and there that I wouldn't have thought of as an American, and vice versa, that they wouldn't have thought of as me being an American and stuff. So,
but those kinds of insights and realizations, I'm guessing, help you as a writer because, you know, it helps your process to recognize and implement those subtle little things into the story.
I think any experiences, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I've lived in Alaska. I've traveled all over. I've lived almost in every single Western state in the United States, all the way over to like Colorado, I think. And in general, I think I pull from every experience in some way. Everything, every person that touches your life, I think some, you can't help but have that in your work in some capacity.
Yeah, that's very true. So, yeah, I mean,
the more experience I have, obviously, the better. It enriches. But yeah, I one of my favorite authors is Shirley Jackson, and she was agoraphobic. So I don't think you necessarily have to go out into the world. I think you just have to have some sort of empathy for it or compassion for it to write it, I guess, in my opinion.
I was wondering, the book you're writing at the moment, is that your first one, or have you actually released other work before?
So I've had some horror short stories published. I did my first novel and finished it about 3 months ago. And that one is a young adult urban fantasy, very Weird West supernatural slant to it. And I'm currently trying to get an agent. I don't know if that's going to work so well. I had my dream agent, actually. Her assistant came back and asked for a partial. And then she came back to me about a week after that and said, yeah, I don't think this is quite for us. So hopes dashed a bit on that. But I've been trying some other avenues with it because I think I might have an issue with the start of the book. So I did try for a mentor, the Pit Mad thing. Didn't get anywhere with that. I tried YA for YA, and actually we're supposed to get the results tomorrow. And both the mentors that I chose wanted the full manuscript. So I'm kind of hoping one of them takes me on and might be able to help me gauge a bit better where I might be going wrong a bit in the start, because I think the issues with the start, and of course that's the first thing anyone sees, so
yeah.
I am nervous about that, because I actually do think the rest of it's pretty solid. I just think there's something not quite right and I can't put my finger on it. So while that's so it's sort of like, I think you were describing in one of your podcasts that you will step away from it for a little while and sometimes the answer will come to you over time. And I guess I kind of take that same sort of approach. So I'm just letting it set. I'll see what happens with this YA for YA thing. See if I get some feedback. In the meantime, I have a nice author friend who told me agents want to know that you have a career. So what is your next project? And I said, well, I was thinking about doing the sequel. She said, no, don't do that, because if no one picks up this book, you're just putting your time into a sequel for nothing. I said, well, okay, that's a good point. And she said, an agent's going to want to know that you have something else on the table. So what I sent you guys was my something else on the table that I started. Again, will be another YA, but it'll be... some of my heritage is Native American, so I borrow a lot of ideas from that culture in a lot of ways, so it'll have a lot of that kind of influence in it. And I guess I'm describing as Watership Down crossed with The Wizard of Oz, kind of, I guess. It'll be something along those lines, but dark.
I really like that that story. It was really intriguing that you sent.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad, bud. That was my goal.
are you doing NaNoWriMo?
I am. I'm one of those people who needs to get pushed. Like, I don't actually like the writing part. I know that sounds stupid. I like the result. I like the product, but the actual process, it drains me. and it takes me so long to do. It'll take me a couple weeks to do a chapter. Because I'm very methodical, and I'm very specific about the way that I, what words I choose and what I do. And I know they say you're not supposed to edit as you go, but I cannot help it. So I'm like,
oh, I'm always doing that.
Yeah, normally it takes me a while to do. So if I have a little bit of a push, like a bit of a deadline, I tend to at least get through it a bit faster, and then I can go back and try and fix things I'm not happy with. So I'm doing NaNoWriMo more just to kick my own butt and kind of get this out, and see what happens with it. I have a rough idea where it's going, but not too much, honestly. It's going to be a bit unplanned in certain ways. So yeah, we'll see. It was initially supposed to be a short story, and it turned into something larger.
As it does.
Yeah. But I tend to write short stories. That's like my thing that I do. And so it's a little different to be moving more to the novel length of things. So, yeah. So hopefully I can keep it up. I'm more concerned I'm not going to be able to write another book. I've done one. Am I actually going to be able to finish another one? So, yeah.
So another thing, like, for the listeners, it was last week. For us, it was actually last night. We talked with Jason Sizemore from Apex Magazine, and we talked about small press publishing and building your career kind of through short stories, and that might also be a viable thing for you to maybe try out.
Funny you should say that. I've actually been shortlisted with Apex on a couple of short stories, but I've never quite gotten there. I've been shortlisted, but never quite gotten that. So I put away the short story stuff to work on the novel. So maybe I'll revisit. I have a couple ideas for a few short stories that I might hash out and then try again. But yeah, I'm not quite good enough apparently for Apex quite yet. Shortlisted, so I'm happy about that, but not quite there. So yeah.
Maybe you should bring out, actually, instead of like putting them away, you should start revisiting old short stories and
revise them.
Yeah. I mean, benefit of time and you know. Hindsight, that
I've thought about that. I have a couple that I really quite like the idea, but I didn't quite like how it turned out. So yeah, I might try that. There's one that you probably really like, because I know that you like The Expanse and things like that. It's kind of a end of world space short story thing, which probably is not scientifically sound in any capacity, but I like it anyway. So I might try and rehash that one out.
And also, like, now that you mention it, it's great when you can show that you have a range, which I personally will never be able to do, because all I do is science fiction, and I don't do YA, I don't do urban fantasy. Okay, my NaNo project is kind of a historical fiction, but still it's serving the sci-fi project. So, but you know, if you have diversity in the themes and topics of your writing, that's an asset.
Yeah. It is. I think I always have some element of horror in everything that I do. That's just me. I don't know. I'm a bit worried about that, actually, if it's diverse enough or not. I kind of just write what I want to write. But I've also noticed sometimes you get pigeonholed, especially once you start publishing, that you kind of get stuck in a particular genre or something, with the exception of like maybe Neil Gaiman or some folks like that. You kind of almost kind of get stuck in this one kind of genre. You know, you're always doing mysteries, or you have to change your pen name if you want to do something else. And I'd rather not.
As it was with Stephen King.
Yeah, I'd really rather not do that. And it didn't used to be that way. Like, Richard Matheson did horror, he did thrillers, he did science fiction, he did, you know, same with Ray Bradbury and other writers like that. They kind of just wrote what they wanted to. And I kind of almost want to go back to that, where it's just, you write what you want. If they want to buy it, they buy it. But I'm also one of those female writers that doesn't want to go by initials and almost hide what my gender is. Yeah. You know, like, I don't want to do that at all. So I went back and forth on should I do a pen name or my real name or what? And I was like, you know what? No, I'm going to be me. If you want to read it, cool. If you don't, because I'm a girl, then you're not my audience. So that's fine. So I don't know. We'll just see what happens.
Yeah, that's kind of the way, like you mentioned. It's weird that people pigeonhole you in into certain genres or certain styles. When, like, Neil Gaiman does a lot of things, as you mentioned, but they are all recognizably Neil Gaiman stories,
and they're very much so. Yes.
And it's, I think it's just a matter of persistence to have a body of work that spans all kinds of styles and genres. But they, you know, like you said, all of them have some kind of horror element to it. So those are going to become Armageddon stories, and you will be known by that.
We'll see. A lot of it's luck and timing, and not so much talent, I'm realizing, sadly. And I have a lot of writers who are well published that tell me the same thing. Like, it's just persistence and luck, and you just gotta hope that it's gonna happen. Mostly I just want someone to read it, especially that the book I finished, because it's, I planned on being a series, and I really like it. Like, it's my own mythos on a ghost world, and it's very much me, and it's not one genre really, it's a big smashing of several. And I just want people to read it. I think that would make me pretty happy if people read it.
How about, have you ever considered self-publishing?
I think that will be my last resort, mainly because I'm lazy. And what I mean by that is, I don't want to do my own marketing if I can help it. I know you'll have to, no matter what, if you go through a publisher or whatever, to a degree. But if you're self-publishing, it's just a lot more work. And I assume so. And you could correct me if I'm wrong on that, since you've done self-publishing and stuff. Martin has, anyway.
Yeah.
It is difficult. I'll certainly grant you that.
The promotion aspect and things like that.
Basically trying to get people to see it.
Yeah. So I know myself well enough to know that I would do better if I had an agent. That would be my, I don't mind paying the 15%, you know, that would be ideal. I'm also realizing that's really hard to get an agent. Publishers seem to be more interested in what I'm writing than agents are, which is really interesting. I've gotten a few publishers interested in this book, where agents have not been nearly as keen. I don't know. I'm going to continue trying the agent thing for a while. Then I'll go to publishers, and if that just doesn't work out, then I'll do self-publishing, because I will have been. Something is going to happen with this. It's not going to just sit there.
What I was thinking is that, and I can't believe that I'm saying this, but there is, like, traditional self-publishing, like putting it on the Amazon marketplace or market or whatever, and that's kind of an oxymoron. Traditional self-publishing. That sounds weird. But the other thing is, like, maybe lightning doesn't strike twice, but Scalzi put his first novel up on his website, and the publisher just bought it.
Yeah, and that has happened a couple of times. I just can't remember the author's name, the one who did The Martian. I think he was a self-pub.
Oh, yeah.
He threw his up for like 99 cents, and it just took off. But there's an Irish publisher as well that did the same thing, made a whole career out of it. I mean, there's been success stories, but again, it's timing and luck.
Yeah.
Just, you could have all the talent in the world, but if you just have bad timing, it may not happen. And I've accepted this, and that's okay. Yeah, I would just be happy if some people read it. So something will happen with it.
And
it will find a market somewhere eventually.
And from what I know about your style and about the feel of what kind of stories you're telling, maybe you want to query career books. It seems right up there, Ellie.
That I want to carry what now?
There is a small publisher called Quirk Books. They publish the Shakespeare, Star Wars, and they do they have a very diverse portfolio, and it seems like it might be a good fit. It's just an idea.
Yeah, shoot me the name. I'm starting to collect some publishers' names that I'll try in this next wave, like Tor. Mm-hmm. I think Tor would probably be a pretty good fit. And a few others like that. There's a few here in Edinburgh as well that do strictly YA. Black and White is here. Edinburgh is obviously pretty big on literature and stuff here. So
if you haven't already, I cannot recommend getting a Writer's Market to flip through and do kind of a research on agents and publishers.
I actually use Query Tracker. I don't know if you've used that at all.
No, not yet. I've seen it's available, but
it's amazing because it's up to date instantaneously, pretty much. Mm-hmm. As soon as there's an issue at all, they'll update it. You'll know that those agents there are kosher. If any of the agents have an issue, they're taken off the list. Any publishers have an issue, they're taken off the list, and it's free. You can pay for an extended service on it, and I love it. It's helped me a lot. So I know that I'm actually speaking to someone more legit. It helps me research some of these small print publishers that have come to me and are interested, where I'm kind of like, maybe not so much, But yeah, that's also a good tool.
So how is your writing process look like? What do you do? Like you said, you're a full-time writer, and that's a great thing. How do you work? What's your process?
Typically I think for a really long time because I don't really necessarily do outlines. I kind of tell myself the story in my head a little bit of, well, that'd be interesting if I did this. And then I'll start to write it. If I have a vague idea of what might happen in the future, I might just kind of put a note further down and continue on. I actually do a tactic that I didn't realize was a tactic until I was reading about Hemingway. I guess he used to do this too. But I actually started to end whatever it was I was writing halfway. So say I'm starting to write a chapter. Normally I would finish that chapter all the way through and finish. But now I get to a point and I end halfway through a sentence and then I leave it. And I have found that I pick up a lot faster and easier the following day if I have something that's half done versus if it were at a completed or a ended spot somehow. You know, sometimes when you're trying to write and you can't, it takes you a little while to work up, like, okay, so where was the story going or whatever. This seems to have gotten rid of that, just ending halfway. And I guess Hemingway used to do the same thing. He just would stop halfway and then continue on the next day. So I don't know if I have a effective process. I do a lot of world building. I think, Greg, you do the same sort of thing. You were saying that you think a lot about how it actually works and things like that. So I do a lot of thinking about that. Like, is this actually a feasible thing, or does this even make any sense? And I'm also a really big history buff, so I do a lot of research because I throw in a lot of history into whatever I do. Typically there's a lot of history. I actually made my own cowboy dictionary. Because in my first book, I have a cowboy, a ghost cowboy. His name's Macasia. And I wanted his dialect to be really specifically Old West. You know, he died in the late 1800s, so I really wanted him to have a pretty thick drawl and stuff. And so I started to create an Excel file of terms and words and things from that era to give it a lot of authenticity. And I think it ended up being about 5,000 lines when I was done, which I still have to use, and it's very handy. So I'm one of those really weird people who really love the research aspect of writing. I will research the heck out of everything and find it super fascinating and interesting. And then it will just take me a while to actually get it onto paper. So yeah, I do a lot of thinking, less writing, more thinking. Pretty much, but I'm generally a lot happier with what I've written when I do it that way versus if I just start to jot something down.
Yeah, you know, there is like two people came to mind. One is Joss Whedon, who repeatedly said that he never starts writing until the people in his head stop talking. That's another way to put it. And the other is, I really love the sentiment of in the West Wing. It was I think Toby Ziegler's character who said that pen and paper is for sissies, because you know, you can just write in your head and after a while it just comes out. And I think that's really valuable to all those people who are not, who want to write but they don't feel, because as with so many things, we tend to turn it into binary. So you're either an outliner or a planner, or you are a pantser or a discovery writer, and it's not necessarily true, or really hardly ever true. You do a hybrid of it most of the time.
Yeah.
So it's so good to see examples of people's process and what works for them, because then, you know, hey, this is a business where nobody knows anything.
And there's no rules.
Yeah.
So, at least in my opinion, there's no rules. You do it any way that you want, as long as you get it out on the paper.
Yeah, and if there are rules, let's break them anyway. So.
Yeah, and well, yes, I think there are some rules that shouldn't be broken because it creates weaker writing. But I'm particular that way. I'm one of those horrible people that I'll be reading a book and I'm like, oh, this guy, his adverbs, it's killing me. So, I mean, yes, I think most rules can be broken as long as you're cautious. I think everything in moderation.
Yeah.
In writing and life and everything, I think everything in moderation is fine.
By the way, that cowboy dictionary, you can actually make a pretty penny off of it if you just
I've thought about that. I have actually thought about that, of just making it actually into a full-on dictionary. Because it has been incredibly helpful. It has been really, really helpful. So yeah, I used to be a history major, and particularly in U.S. history, so I have a lot of of history in entrenched in whatever it is that I do. So you would probably quite like parts of it because I've been told it's very Whedon-esque as far as the humor. One of my favorite movies is Cabin in the Woods, and I really like that kind of snark, subtle humor, and so I have a lot of that kind of humor.
Yeah, and when
throughout it,
when they incorporate the they kind of parody the gimmicks of a genre.
Yes.
And build it into the plot as an active element. That's Cabin in the Woods is just
That's one of that is a brilliant film. Like it, I absolutely.
It really is.
Yeah, it's
completely surprised me when I originally saw it. I was like, this isn't a horror film.
But it is. It is, and it isn't. It's just such a brilliant movie.
It was very well done. I loved it.
That one and Pan's Labyrinth are probably two of my favorite horror films. I know a lot of people wouldn't put them in horror category, but
I'd definitely say Pan's Labyrinth
they're definitely
in this way.
But yeah, Cabin in the Woods is just absolutely brilliant, and the humor is great. And I don't know, I have a certain love of horror and humor kind of being intertwined in certain ways. I think that's a lot of fun.
I think most books and most genres have an allowance for a certain type of humor, because you're always going to get there are certain characters who will use
the comic
what they call or there are certain types of character or types of people who will use gallows humor. They use it as a way of dealing with stressful situations. Soldiers are a case in point. So you're always going to have room for some humor in whatever you write.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially keeping the reader's attention is all about tension and releasing that tension. And humor is a great you can't have a perpetually rising tension. You have to kind of lift it a little bit and. I think it was actually Joss Whedon who said, and I'm paraphrasing, that make it dark, but at the end of it, please God, tell a joke.
For God's sake, tell a joke. I was thinking of the exact same quote myself.
Yeah.
So speaking of Cabin in the Woods, and by the way, that movie they wrote crazy geniuses. As they are, they wrote the.
It was like a weekend or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, they logged themselves into.
But they were talking about it for a long. But they were talking about it for a long time, as I recall. Like they were talking about the plot points and things for a long while.
Yeah.
So that I can very much relate to, talking about it for a while and then just like throwing it out on paper, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So I was going to ask, what kind of books do you read, or what kind of TV or movies do you watch to inspire yourself or kind of get into the mood, and also just for fun?
Man, I'll watch pretty much anything other than really mostly chick flicks. I've never been really big on them. If I do watch a chick flick, it's generally something that's more quirky, like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, or 500 Days of Summer, or Stardust. That's about as chick flicky I think as I get. But I'll watch pretty much everything. I really love really horrible horror flicks, like really bad ones, because you can get ideas from anything. And sometimes if you're just watching a god-awful film, there'll be just this little kernel of something, and it may not even be related, and you'll be like, that'd be a really interesting idea, and it'll spawn something. So I like to watch bad films. Just, one, I don't have to pay close attention, and can work on something else, and two, you never know what it might birth, I guess, in your head. As far as books go, I never actually read a lot of fantasy until more recently, which is a bit funny because I started to write fantasy before I started to read it. But I've been getting a little bit more into YA fantasy and been expanding that knowledge, I guess, a little bit more. But as far as writers that I like, I really like Stephen King. People have issues with him. I have issues with him. But as a writer goes, I think he's super solid. He has a good cadence. He has a good rhythm. The way that he writes is just super solid. It may not be the most beautiful thing in the world, but man, it hits just right. And I don't know how else to explain it, but it just, I think he's probably what I go for as far as a goal, as far as how I write. His endings are terrible. I very much disagree with the fossil method that he does of just discovering the ending. I think you should at least have an idea of where the end is supposed to be when you get there.
Does tend to help, I find.
I think it's failed him a lot of times, and kind of ended on a lackluster kind of note. Sometimes it's worked out wonderfully, and sometimes it just hasn't at all. But yeah, so overall, I think he'd probably be one of my most favorite authors.
Do you think because of that, that's why the movies based on his books are less than satisfactory for the most part, because movies are like they live in their endings, and if the ending is weak, then the whole movie
is weak, and the movie kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
Yes, because the ones that have been good have been by Frank Darabont, I think is how you say his last name. He's the one who did Shawshank Redemption. He did The Green Mile. He did The Mist. Whenever he's adapted any of Stephen King's work, he rewrites the endings a lot of the time, and they end up just being way better. Like The Mist in particular, the ending in his version of The Mist is so much better than the Stephen King version. The Stephen King has actually said, I wish I would have thought of that. Like, he's actually made the comment of, dang it, why didn't I think of that? That's great. So I think it might depend on the director. If the director is true to the work in that particular instance, I think it kind of fails slightly. If they better it with their own interpretation, and I know this is I think this was one of your guys' podcasts before, was should they adapt, should they not? I happen to be a person who likes what they did with Lord of the Rings, because I don't think it would have worked being a strict adaption on film. The way that it was written, I don't think it would have worked as well.
A part of that is probably the fact that Lord of the Rings is like centuries old.
Sorry, you broke up. Say that again.
I say a part of that is probably the fact that Lord of the Rings is like centuries old, so a lot of it won't translate well to film.
Yeah, I think it's part of that, but the way that Tolkien actually wrote, don't get me wrong, he's a good writer, but he didn't have good tendencies. What I mean by that is, you'll remember in the second book, he stuck with just one side, and then the last half of the book is all the other side, which was just throwing as a reader, in my opinion, to go from one group halfway through and then switch to the other one and then never go back to the first one. So there was a lot of little things in there that if you actually did a true adaptation, it would have just not worked as well, I don't think. Particularly with Merry and Pippin, when they go into the forest and everything else. I don't know. I like how they changed his story. And I'm really fine with people changing other people's works to a degree to make it work for screen, because some things I just don't think work as well as they do in your mind or whatever else.
Yeah, well, Tolkien, I think, is more of a historian.
He was a linguist, you know? Yeah, he was a historian, and he was brilliant. But he wasn't really a writer. He was a storyteller, which was fine. I feel that I'm a storyteller, not a writer. I don't know. I just, yeah. I think it's fine for people to change your work sometimes, as long as it's not ridiculously changed.
And to your point, like, I really liked Ready Player One as a book. Not so much the second part, because I think it kind of went off track, but I saw the outrage around the movie, and because it was so different from the book, and at the same time, I think it was the right call to make, because you just can't translate the stuff that's in the book onto the screen. But what you can do is translate the ethos of what he's trying to do in text, and do the same thing but adjust it for film. And with Lord of the Rings, I didn't mind the change. Like, I didn't mind that they changed the story. I did mind the pointlessness of a lot of changes, and I think in this respect Harry Potter is a much better adaptation. I think
I would say that, except for the first two. I thought the first two weren't done as well, and of the Harry Potter movies. I think they got better after that.
Yeah, as they kind of became the books became more serious and more grown up. So did the movies, and it went better. And like with the Tolkien adapting The Hobbit, which is like 80 pages long, into three movies, that was a mistake.
I have issues with the Hobbit stuff, mainly because he didn't stick with his guns. Like, what worked with Lord of the Rings, which was simple special effects, and bigatures and miniatures and things like that, that worked really effectively, and he just went way overboard with the graphics and everything, in my opinion.
Yeah, true enough.
So I did not enjoy that nearly as much. But I really actually liked the writing of Lord of the Rings. And I think that you said that you didn't like the Two Towers of all of them the most. And that's actually my favorite of the movie, is the Two Towers one, because of the way that it's cut. It's cut in such a way that it leaves the audience wondering where these characters are going versus follow the path directly. And I thought that was a really good way of doing it. Very, very different from the book. But I thought for a movie, I thought that worked a lot better.
Yeah, overall, I really like the Lord of the Rings movies. It's just that there are like certain choices that I cannot get along with, like Faramir, the way they changed him, or...
See, and I think that they needed to change him, because if they didn't, that meant that... So in the book, he was able to easily just be like, oh, I don't want the ring. And that takes away the ring's power if you do that completely. Like, if this one guy could just be like, no, it's fine, then what's the point? And so I think they needed to make that change in the movie, because that was the whole point, was that this ring could control anybody. I don't know. We could agree to disagree.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I really like the changes. I think, to me, that they made sense. They to me, anyway, so to go back to the things I read kind of whatever, so history, all that stuff, I watch whatever, because you never know where that idea is going to come from. So,
and speaking of kind of like Weird West, we talked about it, or I brought it up, because I'm completely fascinated by the show. Do you watch Winona Earp at all?
Say that one more time. Do I watch what?
Winona Earp.
Oh, Winona Earp.
Yeah.
I started to watch it. I couldn't really get into it. Mm-hmm. I think I watched through episode 7 or 8. I'll try and give it another shot, I think. I just haven't been in the mood to go back to it, but it was just a little bit too I don't know. I liked the overall idea, though, because it's something that draws me. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing that I would do. It has made me interested in reading the comic, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't decided.
It's such a kind of the Wild West is having such a comeback, and I really like it because there's so much potential in that setting that all genres can kind of use, from, you know, supernatural to kind of I really want to either read or write a Wild West noir, because I think that would work really well.
There's a tabletop game from years ago that was a big inspiration for the book that I wrote, called Deadlands. Have you ever heard of that?
I've seen it on shelves, but I have not played it or read it.
Well, the original system was a lot of fun. It was a D20 system. A lot of fun. Ridiculous game. But the general premise is that the Civil War was never won. North and South are still fighting. And during this, there's a big earthquake in California, to where California just breaks into a bunch of islands and has a substance that they discover called Ghost Rock that ends up being basically the main power source for everything, like steam engines and everything else. But with this Ghost Rock comes a whole other slew of things, which is like a lot of manitous and spirits and evil stuff. So it's like this really interesting Weird West idea. But yeah, it's super fun. But it was one of my inspirations for the book that I wrote.
And that reminds me that you're a gamer. Does that? Do you think it kind of informed or influenced the way that you write or the stories that you tell?
Well, definitely, because I wrote it sort of like it was an RPG, because each character has their thing that they do, and each kind of has their powers in a lot of ways. I could totally see it as a video game, to be honest, because it just kind of, that's kind of how I wrote it in a lot of ways, was as an RPG.
Have you gotten used to the taste of Iron Brew yet?
Ew, it's icky.
You'll never make it in Scotland if you can't handle Iron Brew.
No, it's awful. My husband tries to get me to try it. And, it's icky. Don't like it.
Yeah, there'll probably come a point, maybe around the 5-year mark, possibly 10, where you'll keep saying it's icky, but you'll be chugging it down like the rest of them.
No, I don't. I really don't think so. I did try some barbecue that used Iron Brew, like a barbecue sauce, which was actually pretty good. But I just don't like it. Like I've tried it several times. It's icky. Don't like it. Everyone here drinks it. I don't. Well, never.
Fair enough. Okay, if I'm doing the honors as per usual, in that case, I've completely lost where we are. So, anyway, no, sorry, you're gonna have to do it, Greg. I'm completely lost now.
All right,
my train of thought is just completely all over the place. There was something about there's something about things happening and weeks, and I don't know.
Yes, so thank you everyone for joining in, and thank you Amarna for joining us and talking to us. It's been a delight.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
As per usual, we will interrogate our lovely guest to give us links and other materials for the show notes. Please talk to us. Let us know what you thought. You can reach us on Twitter, either our individual accounts. What's yours, Armana? Is it Armana Forbes? Do I recall it correctly?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we will put your Twitter handle in the show notes as well. As well as our own, you can find the podcast's own Twitter account at Right Wings. Send us an email, rightwings.podcast@gmail.com. Yell at us on Anchor, because you can leave voice messages.
And also, don't forget to rate us on iTunes or any of the other podcast playing places that allow you to do ratings, because yes, the more you rate us, then the more people get to see us, and the more we get to build and expand on what we have.
Yeah. You don't have to, you know, rate us 5 stars, although that's much appreciated. It's the amount of ratings that count, unfortunately.
But 5 stars are always nice.
Yeah, I'm not saying it, you know, but they don't have to do it. They should just rate us whatever they feel like it. If you like the podcast, share it with your friends. If you didn't like it, share it with your enemies. We will take anyone and everyone who would listen to us.
At this point in time, we'd even take sharing it with your cat.
Yes. So thank you, everyone. Have a great Halloween. Now, you know, we,
or rather, yeah, we hope you did have a good Halloween.
Yeah, we hope you did have a nice Halloween. We certainly did. It was a treat, Armana. Thank you very much. And we will talk to you next week or whenever.
Absolutely. See you next time.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.